All right, we have four argued cases this morning. The first is number 18-1121, Max Chief Investments Limited versus Walk and Pan. Mr. Bradford. Go ahead.
May it please the Court, Michael Bradford for Max Chief Investments Limited. The main issue in this case is whether Walk and Pan's request for an out-of-state courts to issue an injunction against Tennessee-based MECO is sufficient to subject Walk and Pan to personal jurisdiction in Tennessee for a related declaratory judgment action. And it's important to keep in mind that Walk and Pan filed this case against Staples in California, where Staples is a mere reseller. This isn't a Staples product. It's exclusively distributed by MECO. So this is basically what's called a customer suit. And this court's Nintendo and Katz decisions, the court explained in customer suits where a reseller is sued, the product supplier, even if they're not named, is often and generally the true defendant, because for purposes of indemnity or for just customer relationships, they are typically required to come in and defend the Staples, in this case, the reseller.
So was MECO or MECO specifically targeted in the California action?
Well, I believe they were. The case was about
I'm talking specifically. Are they named?
Well, they're not named as a party, but the complaint has several photographs of the product at issue, as exhibits. They form part of the complaint. And for example, Appendix 228 shows the product, Sudden Solution, by MECO, MECO Corporation, Greenville, Tennessee. Appendix 228 is a shipping label that was attached to the product at issue from MECO Corporation, Greenville, Tennessee. And then Appendix 230 shows a label that it was affixed to the product. And this is from their complaint full-page label. This shows MECO Corporation, Greenville, Tennessee.
Okay, but accepting that, there doesn't seem to be any connection with Tennessee here with respect to the patent claim, except for the fact that that's where MECO's principal place of business is, right? There wasn't any, weren't any threats communicated to MECO in Tennessee or any effort to enforce the patent against MECO?
Well, I mean, the request for an injunction against the distributor of the product, the request for relief specifically asked for an injunction not against just Staples, but against the distributor. I mean, it's explicitly asked for an injunction against the distributor. So that action expressly targets Tennessee, and that's part of the Calder effects test. What's the focal point of Walk and Pan's action here? It's Staples, you know, as a reseller. The focal point is MECO.
Hold on.
And do you mean to hold?
Hold on 1 second.
No, I'm just
going to
say that. You can go ahead.
Okay.
The California action is an enforcement action, and an injunction that you're talking about is a result of that enforcement action. The suit in Tennessee was for declaratory judgment.
Correct.
I mean, there's a difference there, isn't there?
Well, but the enforcement activity, that's what's necessary to create declaratory judgment a declaratory judgment jurisdiction. And upon the Staples case, again, the focal point of that being MECO in Tennessee, there was a Staples' immediate response was to send a letter to MECO in Tennessee asking for a defense. They asked for indemnity in Tennessee from MECO. So MECO is the exclusive distributor of this product, but it's made by Max Chief. And so upon receiving this request for indemnity, MECO then asked Max Chief, well, hey, come in, defend us, and also handle this statement.
You're arguing a question that I believe this court already answered in Advocate.
Well, the Advocate decision, it discusses there were other cases in other jurisdictions. The issue there is those were, they had no relation to the forum, or at least there's no mention of any relation to the forum. Now, if the California case involved a California distributor, and it all the parties were in California, and it asked for an injunction against California parties, well, we wouldn't be saying that that subjects walk and pan to jurisdiction in Tennessee.
Why didn't you just counterclaim in California for a declaratory judgment?
Well, because for one thing, because MECO is based in Tennessee, and that's.
So why would that affect that?
Well, that Max Chief is protecting its customer. The whole genesis of the declaratory judgment action was MECO saying, "Hey."
But what I'm trying to get at is, what do you lose by raising that in the California forum instead of going to Tennessee?
Well, it's not the correct party. Staples shouldn't be handling this case. And what really is happening here is Staples...
Why isn't Staples the correct party? I mean, they're distributing an infringing product.
Well...
I mean, to me, you're saying, well, it would be more convenient for Staples and the producer and distributor for it to have it all handled in Tennessee, but there's nothing in the statute that prevents them from suing Staples, is there?
Well... They can sue Staples, but as explained in Nintendo...
Right, so they're suing California is perfectly legitimate, and if Staples wants somebody to come in and indemnify them under their whatever their contractual agreements, they can, but that doesn't mean the suit in California is improper.
Well, the cases in California weren't dismissed. They're just stayed under the customer suit.
Well, sure, but you're suggesting that this case should proceed under declaratory judgment theory in Tennessee because they chose to, you know, they're suing essentially Max Chief, not Staples. But they're the patent owner. They get to make the decision where they sue for infringement. Why should you, as I think you're a foreign company, right?
Max Chief is a foreign company.
Do they have any business location in the United States?
Not to my knowledge.
Why should you get to dictate the forum of the validity determinations?
Well,
rather than the patent holder and where they want to sue for infringement?
Well, because, they're protecting their customer, MECO.
They can protect their customer in California.
Well, that is true. But MECO will be involved in this case. And, you know, what Walk and Pan is doing, since the T.C. Heartland decision, what's happened is, you know, patent owners, where they can sue has been curtailed greatly. And it's in where a alleged infringer has a principal place of business or has a residence, what Walk and Pan is doing is say, well, this product is supplied by MECO. We don't want to sue them where we're supposed to in Tennessee. We're going to sue Staples. And as this court recognized in Katz and Nintendo, what that does is that the true defendant in the Staples case is MECO. You're making MECO come to California, or luckily for them, they're having somebody else. You know, the product supplier is forced to come into a jurisdiction where they shouldn't have to be defending a case.
It seems to me that your argument is really leads to the conclusion that Max should have filed its declaratory action in California.
I don't think they had to.
What would you lose by doing that?
What we would lose is MECO is their customer. They want to make MECO happy. The court, they're located in Greenville. The court where the DJ action was sued is in Greenville. It's the jurisdiction where MECO is located.
But why do they care? If Max Chief is the one that's going to come in and defend the suit on their behalf in California, then What difference does it make that it's in California or Tennessee?
Well, I mean MECA is going to be very involved. I mean, in their state, the state wants to protect.
How do you think they're going to be involved?
Well, they're the one distributing this throughout the country. MECO is selling to Staples. I mean, they're.
How does that relate to the declaratory judgment action? Isn't it? I mean, are they going to be all that involved? Is this just invalidity, or do you have non-infringement
provisions
too?
Yeah,
but you're the one. I mean, MaxSheet's the one that makes the product.
Correct.
MECO's just a pass-through distributor.
Well, I mean, they've been involved. I don't know what the specifics of this. They have been involved in design in the past. I mean, I think they will be involved in this case.
If Black and Pan had wanted to sue MaxSheet, where would they have sued them?
Well, I know they could have sued them in D.C. I don't know off the top of my head where they may be subject to jurisdiction. But perhaps, I mean, they would have consented to jurisdiction in Tennessee.
Before we run out of time, let me ask you a question about the tortious interference claim.
Sure.
And if there had been threatening letters sent to customers in Tennessee, it may well be that there would be jurisdiction over the tortious interference claim, and theoretically maybe the tortious interference claim could be combined with the declaratory judgment action. But as I understand it, there's only one threatening letter that was sent to Tennessee, and that concerned, if I recall correctly, a Kansas entity. Is that correct?
It was an out-of-state entity. It was not a Tennessee entity. But it was sent to Tennessee.
It was only the one letter?
It was one letter, correct. There were other letters sent to other jurisdictions.
Other letters in other jurisdictions?
I'm in my rebuttal at the time. Do you want me to continue?
I didn't believe any of the questions. Okay, you can save your rebuttal. Ms. Ray?
May it please the court?
You're going to need to move the microphone down so that I'm speaking into it.
All right. May it please the court? Your Honors, counsel, and guests.
Is there any question that if MaxSheet had filed a third-party complaint in California that there would be personal jurisdiction over Walk and Pan to adjudicate that?
No. Walk and Pan, although it's a Chinese company, does business in
California. You're going to have to move the mic because it's not picking up. Try that.
Okay, Walk and Pan, although it's a Chinese company, does business in California. California also, in addition, as I understand it, MaxSheet appellant distributes in California too. So that would have worked. But I want to clarify a few things. Your questions, which were totally on point. Walk and Pan only did two things, and all of them were out of state. There were no letters in Tennessee. Some letters were sent to possible infringing parties after Walk and Pan noticed that were possibly infringing tables in being sold in Staples and Walmart and Lowe's. And those letters were sent in California. They were sent in Illinois and some other states, but nothing was sent to Tennessee. And
well, I thought there was one letter that was sent to Tennessee, but it was sent to a non-Tennessee entity.
No.
No?
I don't think there were any letters sent to Tennessee. But even if there were, as you know, Your Honor, letters regarding infringement have a privileged status anyway, and they do not draw the party into jurisdiction on a specific personal jurisdiction because of the privileged status of infringement letters. And in addition, the out-of-state...
I'm not talking about infringement letters. I'm talking tortious interference, threatening letters.
Well, tortious interference is, I believe, Your Honor, a misidentification of what Walk and Pan has done. Tortious interference is like overstatement of a party trying to enforce their patent. And they're claiming by tortious interference that there's something wrong with that. that.
Well, there is something wrong with it if the threats are baseless, right?
I couldn't hear.
If the threats are baseless, there would be something
wrong.
Well,
that would be a question that's premature. And in addition, the right of a party to enforce its patent.
Well, but I mean, it's a simple proposition. If you send baseless letters accusing someone of infringement and send those into the state, that could be the basis for a tortious interference claim, right?
A, the letters were not sent into the state, but with
if they were,
presumption of validity,
just if they were, hypothetically, if they were sent into the state, that would create the basis for a tortious interference claim, and there would be personal jurisdiction over that, right?
I would disagree with that, Your Honor, because the presumption of validity allows the patentee to try to enforce their patent.
You're discarding my hypothetical. I'm saying the claims are baseless.
Well, baseless would mean that there's no right to the patent. And
well,
we
that's
don't know
exactly
that.
Right. That's the problem. I mean, I don't understand why you're fighting this. If you claim to have patent rights and you send threatening letters into the state and the claims are baseless, that could lead to a tortious interference claim, right? And under Calder, there would be personal jurisdiction.
As a hypothetical, but
yeah,
that
well,
didn't
that's
happen
all,
here.
I understand.
That didn't happen here. There were no letters sent into the state. And
but there was no. There was one letter sent into the state. Am I mistaken? I thought that I read in the record there was one letter.
Walk-in-Pan doesn't have any distributors or any connections in Tennessee. The distributors are all appellants. There's really been no contacts with Tennessee, other than some sales, commercial activity, which doesn't count for specific personal jurisdiction.
Well, I think we'll get back to the letter in a little bit, but let me ask you, doesn't Walk-in-Pan have sales in Tennessee?
Yes, they do.
So why shouldn't the fact that you're selling in Tennessee subject you to jurisdiction there?
Commercial activity in and of itself doesn't create personal jurisdiction.
Not by itself, but is it a factor? Can it be a factor?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
What legal authority do you have for that?
The Supreme Court Burger King case requires for personal jurisdiction that in a declaratory judgment action that the defendant have purposely directed their activities to the state and those activities relate to litigation and that asserting a personal jurisdiction would comport with fair play.
So, and to care, okay. I agree that commercialization alone is not enough to confer jurisdiction. But what about commercialization in conjunction with a letter indicating tortious interference?
Well, that might imply some kind of enforcement, even imply some kind of connection to the enforcement of the patent that is the subject of the declaratory judgment action. There might be some connection there, but that's not the case here.
Well, what about the letter that appears at Appendix 278? Do you have the appendix, then?
No, I don't.
You don't bring the appendix to the argument? We expect you to have the appendix so you can answer our questions.
I don't have it, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
Well, in terms of talking about the commercial activities, a number of cases in this court has held directly that commercial activities don't impact the question of personal jurisdiction. Commercial activities don't directly impact the question of personal jurisdiction, particularly in an action on declaratory judgment where the connection, the due process connection relates to enforcement of the patent. Now, your question was, if there was tortious interference related to enforcement of the patent somehow in the state? Hypothetically, maybe yes, but that's not the case here. There's really no connection with Tennessee in concerning enforcement. I think there's a kind of a myth in Woven here that there was a targeting of Tennessee in any way. Wakampan actually sent some letters concerning infringement, brought a legal action because of that, and those things had no connection whatsoever to Tennessee. They were all out of state, out of foreign activities.
Are you saying that you didn't send any infringement letters into Tennessee?
Correct.
I mean, it would be helpful if you have appendix, because what we're looking at is a letter dated October 15, 2015, saying if your law firm represents Wakampan and that Coleman Company is infringing, and this letter is sent to an attorney in Knoxville, Tennessee, and it is signed by Mr. Wong. So it seems like you're not. There's at least one letter.
I'm going to give you my copy of the appendix so that you can look and see the letter we're talking about.
Yes, there does seem to be a letter to Tennessee.
Well, then why did you tell us there were no letters? I mean, you're supposed to understand your own record, you know?
Well, my mistake, Your Honor. Let me say this. In a number of cases, Avocent, Breckenridge, and other cases, letters sent to the forum still do not amount to specific personal jurisdiction in the case because sending infringement letters as a privileged status that a patentee has and doesn't implicate specific personal jurisdiction. The cases have held that there must be other activities toward enforcement of a patent in the forum. That other activities has to be something very specific to, related to enforcement of the intellectual property. A lot, in the cases, there has been licensing, distributorships, commercialization, a number of things that other parties have done, and that does not qualify for personal jurisdiction.
It doesn't qualify for a declaratory judgment action to send letters into the state, but why wouldn't it qualify as a basis for personal jurisdiction over a tortious interference claim under Calder?
Possibly it would, but I don't believe the facts align with this case. First of all, the tortious interference claim is a state claim, which essentially is preempted by federal law. The claim of tortious interference is something that was dealt with by this court in Globe Trotter Software versus Eli Computer, where they said patents would be of little value if infringers could not be notified of the infringement, and basically discussed the fact that sending out of letters about a patent is not tortious interference. When the letter sent...
Well, they are if they're frivolous allegations of infringement or they're allegations relating to a patent that is not reasonably known to be valid.
But that's a question that's way premature.
Not necessarily. I mean, you may have dockets, records. Again, this is hypothetical. If you have records in your business that says this company's making something similar, it's close, but it doesn't infringe, but yet you send out an infringement letter, that's frivolous, isn't it? That would be grounds for tortious interference, wouldn't it?
Hypothetically, but how would you know this until later on, until you have a litigation on that?
But that doesn't mean that there's no... I mean, you're suggesting that patent law preempts tortious interference claims altogether. It clearly doesn't. So somebody could file a claim. They may lose because you may prove you have good faith in asserting infringement and validity, and they didn't have a good basis for asserting the opposite. But that doesn't mean the cause of action doesn't exist. I don't understand your answer to our question. If hypothetically the facts would have shown that you were asserting these patents in a frivolous way, that would form the basis for a tortious interference case, wouldn't it?
Hypothetically, yes.
And if those infringement actions were directed at Tennessee, wouldn't that create personal jurisdiction for that Tennessee company to file a declaratory judgment action in combination with a tortious interference claim?
I think hypothetically you have a point there, but the cases have held very clearly that sending infringement letters is a privileged thing that patentees are free to do without fear of jurisdiction in another forum. Even if in the cases of Avison, Breckenridge, and Campbell Pett, letters were sent. Maybe there were allegations,
But Avison, in that case, it doesn't involve a tortious interference claim.
Doesn't involve what?
A tortious interference.
No, I don't think that does.
Oh, well, that's what we're talking about. That letter that appears at 278 is what they claim is the basis for personal jurisdiction over a tortious interference claim. And apparently, similar letters were sent to entities in other states, right? You don't dispute that.
No.
And so what is it? Does the letter that was at 278 concern activities in Tennessee?
Apparently so, yes.
Is one letter enough to create personal jurisdiction?
Well, my argument, Your Honor, is that letters do not create personal jurisdiction.
Well, Siobhan, you can't very well argue that if they sent 50 letters into Tennessee based on a frivolous allegation of patent infringement, that wouldn't be sufficient for personal jurisdiction over a tortious interference claim, right?
Right, but I'm arguing, Your Honor, that concluding tortious interference at this stage is very premature. There's not really a case of that.
I thought you would be arguing that there is no frivolous allegation of patent infringement because the patent infringement case has been stayed. And we don't know whether there's patent infringement or not. I thought your argument would be there cannot be a frivolous allegation because we don't know. It's the patent infringement case has been stayed in California.
You said it much better than me. That's what I'm trying to say about it being premature. In my mind, there's no frivolous allegations of patent infringement, and that hasn't been demonstrated. And how can there be a...
Well, in their tortious interference claim, they do allege that the allegations of patent infringement are frivolous, right?
They do allege that.
Okay, so we don't know whether that'll prove out or not, but certainly if there were letters sent and allegations that they were frivolous, that would provide personal jurisdiction over a tortious interference claim, wouldn't it?
Yes, the tortious interference requires some demonstration of bad...
Well, ultimately, when the case goes to trial, yes, but... For personal jurisdiction, we're dealing with the allegations of the complaint. You don't lose personal jurisdiction just because you can't prove your claim.
Well, I feel that the tortious interference claim is not appropriate at this time because there's no facts to back it up. It's just a...
There's never facts to back it up when you file the complaint. It's based upon allegations of the complaint, and that's how jurisdiction is assessed. I don't understand your argument that because they haven't proved it yet, there's no jurisdiction. That's never the way jurisdiction works. I mean, you may be able to prove a lack of jurisdiction after jurisdictional fact-finding, but isn't it basic civil procedure that the jurisdiction of a court is assessed on the allegations in a well-pled complaint?
Yes, but it's so premature to claim that a patentee just by claiming that somebody has infringed their patent is engaging in tortious interference with somebody's business because
how else would you suggest that the defendant get a tortious interference case in court other than by filing a complaint with well-pled allegations suggesting that? You can dispute them. It sounds to me you're like saying they haven't proved the merits yet, so the court doesn't have jurisdiction. Well, that's not the way jurisdiction works. You file a complaint. And again, hypothetically, because all we have is one letter here, but if we had a situation where your client had directed frivolous allegations of infringement into Tennessee, if the defendant resident Tennessee company had filed a complaint saying, we think these are frivolous allegations, they tortiously interfere with our business, and there is jurisdiction here. Why wouldn't that establish personal jurisdiction? Because you had directed frivolous letters, at least on a well-pled complaint, into the jurisdiction.
Well, you're saying some very true things, but it was my understanding that sending an infringement letter, even if you're claiming two steps away that somehow that's going to interfere with your business, that that's a privileged communication.
That's a merits defense. It's not a jurisdictional defense.
You mean in terms of the tortious interference claim?
Sure. It's a defense that our letters weren't tortious interference because we're entitled to send letters alleging infringement and they were in good faith. It doesn't do anything to disrupt the personal jurisdiction of Tennessee if indeed the other side made well-pled allegations that they were subject to tortious interference and claims of frivolous patent infringement.
Well, Your Honor, even if we do have that premise, isn't that a state claim that wouldn't qualify for federal court?
I'm not here to answer your questions. Is it a state claim that without the court's jurisdiction or not?
I believe it would not be within the jurisdiction of the court.
We've suggested in various cases that the court would have jurisdiction over such a claim because in order to prevail, the court would have to decide a question of patent law, and that the other criteria for subject matter jurisdiction are satisfied under those circumstances.
Well, there have been Supreme Court cases such as Gunn versus Minton that have not gone along with this.
Well, we've had cases in our court since Gunn versus Minton which have addressed this very question and suggested that there is subject matter jurisdiction.
I accept that, Your Honor.
Okay, well, unless there are other questions, I think. Okay, thank you. We're out of time here. You can get it. Okay, Mr. Bradford, you have a little over 3 minutes.
Your Honor.
What does the record show about the sending of letters similar to the one that's at 278 at the appendix? Does the record show that there were similar letters sent to entities in states other than Tennessee?
There are allegations in the complaint that happened. The actual copies of the letters are not in the record. But yes, there are allegations in Max Chief's amended complaint that letters were sent into other states.
Does the complaint allege that there was more than one letter sent to Tennessee?
It's my recollection that the letter was an attachment to the
complaint.
Yes.
But does the complaint allege that there were more letters sent to Tennessee?
I don't believe. I believe it just alleged it's one into Tennessee.
Okay.
For example, in Silent Drive, the court said we have at 1206, we have repeatedly held that the sending of infringement letters would satisfy the minimum contacts requirement. requirement of due process. And the,
No. That doesn't work because, rightly or wrongly, our cases have established the sending of infringement letters alone is not sufficient for declaratory judgment jurisdiction, for personal jurisdiction of those circumstances. Our questions relating to these letters have concern of tortious interference claim and personal jurisdiction over the tortious interference claim.
Well, and it's for those, there's policy considerations that, you know, you've allowed patent owners to provide people with notice of their patents. But a lot of that is to do with promoting settlement and to avoid litigation. Well, here, they've sent letters in the jurisdiction, and they have filed that are, we believe, baseless and subject to a tortious interference claim. And they've also filed a lawsuit requesting injunction against a distributor that's, as shown in their complaint, clearly distributed by Meeko Corporation of Greenville, Tennessee. When you send letters into jurisdiction alleging infringement, file a lawsuit that's focusing on a Greenville, Tennessee distributed table, I think you have to reasonably anticipate you can be held into court in Tennessee. If they wanted, what they should have done is they should have sued Meeko where they could have, which was in Tennessee. And instead of trying to get Meeko or someone on Meeko's behalf to come in to California. So whenever they took this action, when they decided to sue a mere reseller, where the true defendant, again, under Nintendo and Katz, is Meeko. And it is fair and it is reasonable to ask. When they do that, they should be subject to a risk that they will be forced to go where they should have filed the suit in the first place, and that's in Tennessee. They have to reasonably anticipate being held there. They've expressly aimed an intentional activity, this lawsuit, at a Greenville, Tennessee distributed table.
Okay, we're out of time. Thank you, Mr. Bradford. Thank you, Ms. Wright. The case is submitted. Our next